Nothing. The scent of the candles was stinging my eyes.
He's a frightened child with a limited view of the world. And, more important, he doesn't know the first thing about how magic works. His kind rarely do. I only need a few drops, Ingrid said. Surely you can spare that much?
No, I said.
I can't fully answer your question without it. That would be like asking a doctor to diagnose an illness without an X-ray.
Exactly what Zeke had said she would say.
No.
Rain said.
Told you she would be like this.
Ingrid sighed.
Very well. We'll try this a different way. Rain?
Sure, Rain said. Ingrid set her glass down and reached for my hand. I started to pull away, but she caught my fingers and held them. Her grip was firm. She held my hand, examining my fingers and probing the phalanges beneath the skin. A chill crept over me, raising goosebumps all along my arms.
You will remember, eventually, she said. You will remember how you came to be this way. You will remember the moment you died and did not die.
You will remember, Rain said. Her low, seductive voice was back, slow as a hot summer's night, deep as a well. You'll remember eventually. The slick, cool grass. Melanie's laugh. Hot, stinging skin.
One by one, the sensations returned. You may think the memories are gone, Ingrid went on, after what seemed an impossible length of time. And you may take comfort in that. You may tell yourself you have not changed. But it is a mistake to think of yourself as the same person you were before.
I'm not... Ingrid squeezed my fingers and I stopped, sealed my lips together. I waited, trying not to meet her eyes, trying to count my breaths. I lost focus every time I made it to 9 or 10. The slick, cool grass. Melanie's laugh. Hot, stinging skin. The whole of that night was spooling out before me. Bright. Loud with details I had forgotten, whirling through my mind with frantic energy.
You'll do well pretending to be human, for a while, Ingrid said.
You're pretending to be human, Rain echoed quietly, no more than a murmur. I am human, I thought. I couldn't say it.
But it won't last. In time you will choose to be more monster than human. You will shed the pretense of care, the charade of empathy. When you make that choice, there is no way back.
There is no way back, Rain said.
What do you crave?
Ingrid asked. I was dizzy, unstable, and disoriented. Rain was still speaking, but I couldn't understand her anymore. The words were flowing and falling and meaningless. Ingrid must have given me something after all, even though I had heeded Zeke's warning. There was something in the air, in those pungent candles, in her touch and in Rain's voice, some earthy, rich drug like Mr. Willow's herbs and insects. I closed my eyes. I tasted blood. Blood and iron and grit. And I tasted peanut butter, too, and Sunday roast and potatoes. I saw a knife penetrating my abdomen and the muzzle flare of a gun. I saw the baseball bat that had been my birthday present swinging down at my face and felt the rough scrape of solid rock beneath my fingers as I scrambled through an absolute darkness. And no, 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 those were the wrong memories, the wrong echoes. These belonged to people who had been dead and gone for years. Buried and rotted away long before I had become what I was. I had no right to these memories. The killers were mine. But the victims belonged only to themselves.
What do you crave?
Ingrid asked. and Rain said,
"You know what you want to do."
The impossible memories evaporated like mist in the morning sun, and I was alone. I was alone in the backyard of an empty house, alone on a dark roadside, alone in the red room. But every time I lifted my hand, every time I reached out, another person appeared, and they flinched, and they fell. First, the ones I knew, the men I had already killed. Then more, people I had never seen before, men and women with black shadows clinging to the insides of their skin, anchored to the blunt teeth at the backs of their mouths. Every single one of them a murderer. Every single one irresistible. I touched them one by one, feather light and intimate. And one by one they died, falling in lifeless heaps as I walked across cities, across mountains and plains, across neighborhoods of houses lit from within with cowering yellow light. There was blood on my hands, blood in my mouth, blood running in rivulets around my feet. And every time it dried and flaked away, I found another murderer. I walked until I became a plague of vengeance in a human mask, and the city began to look like my city. The neighborhoods like those I had always known. And I was walking down a street I knew, approaching a house I had seen before. A single light shone in an upstairs window. A shadow moved behind the glass, furtive, scared. A dead boy. I opened my eyes. I was slumped into the corner of Ingrid's sofa. My neck was stiff, my side throbbing where Lyle had cut me, my fingers cold. The candles had burned down and softened. The light in the room was golden, the breeze cooler. It had been just after noon when I first stepped into Ingrid's house. Now it was early evening. I had lost hours in the space between her words. "What?" I said. My mouth was dry. My lips chapped. My heart raced and I tried to pull my hand free, but Ingrid held tight. "What did you do to me?"
"Your ability to lie to yourself won't last," she said. "Blood? Pain? Revenge? Is that what you want?"
"No, no, I don't want anything." Panic was rising like a thunderstorm. I couldn't think clearly. She wouldn't let me go. Rain was gone. Ingrid and I were alone, and I didn't know what she had done. What are you doing? Let me go!
"Revenge," she said, as though I had answered. "You crave it more than anything. You won't be able to stop yourself."
"Stop! What did you do to me?"
I saw myself insensible and open-mouthed, as empty as Brian Kerr on the floor of a blood-painted room, and just as vulnerable.
"What did you do?"
"I didn't have to do anything. It is your nature now," she said. "It is instinct. You will start with those you choose to believe are guilty or dangerous, but you won't stop there. It will become easier and easier to convince yourself that others deserve it too. And soon you won't concern yourself with reasons at all."
"No, let me go."
"There is only one way to prevent it. There is only one person whose death can have any real meaning to you. It can set you free. The person who did this to you. The one who ended your life."
"Stop! Let me go!" I didn't realize I was shouting until I felt the tear of it in my throat.
The entire forest fell silent and held its breath. I wrenched my hand away and stood so quickly I knocked my shin into the edge of the trunk, felt my recently healed knee twinge in protest. Outside, birds chattered again and a breeze stirred through the aspen trees. The shadows were long. It would be dark soon. I had refused to give Ingrid what she asked for, but she had taken something anyway.
I relaxed my hands from fists at my sides. I don't want to hear any more. I'm leaving.
You should stay here. There is more for us to discuss.
You don't want to know what will happen to you?
No.
You don't want to know what you will do?
No, I don't want to know.
Are you sure?
Ingrid crossed her legs and sat back, folded her hands over her knee. Even though she was sitting and I was standing, I felt small and quaking before her.
This is the best part. You are a fascinating creature.
No, I said. I want to leave.
Whether you hear it or not has no effect on how true it is,
she said.
You have no choice anymore. Your death has made you into this thing, and there is nothing you can do about it. If you give me but a drop, I can tell you.
I don't care. I'm leaving.
Sit down.
No, I said no. I don't want to hear it. I don't need to know.
You can keep your ignorance if you want, but you still owe me your information in trade.
She was right. I had agreed. As much as I wanted to run from that house and never look back, I wanted even more to go without Ingrid believing I had reneged on our deal. It may not have been magically binding, but I didn't trust her. I sat again, but not on the sofa. I didn't want to be close enough for her to touch. I settled into the armchair by the window. What do you want to know?
What do you want to tell me?
She replied. I thought it over before answering. I didn't know what she was going to do with the information I offered. Before meeting her, before she had stolen an entire afternoon, I would have thought that anybody, with any intentions at all, would be better than Mr. Willow. But Ingrid unsettled me nearly as much as he did.
Lies are not as valuable as the truth, Ingrid said dryly.
I'm not going to lie, I told her, and I meant it. Picking and choosing bits of the truth was not quite the same thing as lying. I'm just trying to figure out where to start. It's been a weird few days.
Tell me, she said.
I told her some of it, but not everything. I didn't tell her about the men I had killed, but I told her about hitchhiking across the country and meeting a kid at a truck stop who picked me out as somebody, something, unusual. I didn't tell her his name. I told her how I had found my way to Mr. Willow's church, but I also told her I wasn't sure exactly where it was. Mr. Willow was there with Violet and Lyle, and I had no interest in protecting them. But helpless Esme was also at the house, and the children and the woman with the knitting needles. I didn't trust Ingrid to distinguish between prisoner and captor. I did tell her that it was more of a cover than a real church, and she snorted, unsurprised.
Yes, she said. He did that here as well. It was his father's idea. A man can get away with all manner of irrational nonsense if everybody believes he's doing it for God.
I also told her what I had done to Brian Kerr. Rain would tell her anyway, and I wasn't opposed to Ingrid knowing I could be dangerous too. I didn't tell her about the stolen memories.
We had thought, when we drove Willow and his congregation away, that they would stay gone,
Ingrid said, when I was finished.
He won't like that you and Rain have escaped his grasp. He'll send somebody after you.
Can he really do what he thinks he's doing? I asked. Those people I saw, they looked... Some of them looked like they were brain damaged, to be honest. But is it possible they used to be monsters and aren't anymore? One of the girls said she was... said it had worked for her. Is that even possible? Ingrid's lips parted, the beginning of an answer, but she paused, and she thought about it for a long while.
I don't know, she said finally. He wouldn't be the first to try, but Edward Willow was never a very skilled magician. I find it hard to believe he could do it without help. and any creature that could help would be doing so for its own purposes.
Stone and iron and laughter in the darkness. She will be so happy to see you.
I suppressed a shudder.
Ingrid went on. But if your estimate of how many people they've taken is accurate, he has a lot of power at his disposal. Anything is possible. He must be stopped.
On that, at least, we were in agreement. What are you going to do?
It's not my decision to make.
She stood up.
I will share what you have told me with the community. We drove him away before, and we will do it again if necessary. I won't keep you any longer.
Just like that, our conversation was over. Ingrid waited until we were outside to say,
You should have listened to how this will end for you.
A familiar house on the dark street. A single light burning. A shadow in the window. I pressed my fingers against the scarf around my neck, digging into the hidden bruises, the ones that never healed. And for a moment I felt the hands that had put them there.
I had listened. Whatever she had done to me, however she had put that vision of the future in my head, I knew exactly what she was telling me.
I stepped down from the porch. The sun was setting, draping the valley and forest in shadow, but the tops of the hills were still bright. Zeke's truck was parked outside the fence. I had expected him to be gone. By the barn, Rain was talking with a man who laughed loudly at whatever she was saying.
You are not what you used to be, Ingrid said. You can't go on pretending nothing has changed.
Oh, I know that, I told her. I kept my voice light, my tone flippant. Do you really think that's what I'm doing? Give me a little bit of credit. I'm just not convinced you or anybody else knows anything either. It was nice talking to you. Have a good night.
Chapter 25. As I left the house, Rain wandered over from the barn to meet me. She introduced me to Stuart, Ingrid's son, who smiled too widely and held onto my hand a shade too long. I pulled my hand away, rubbed it surreptitiously on my jeans. Ingrid had never killed anyone, but her son had, and unlike most of the killers I had met since I woke up, Stuart looked exactly sketchy enough to be a murderer.
Guess that must have gotten boring for you, I said to Rain, just sitting there.
It wasn't so bad. I can entertain myself. You get what you came for? I didn't want to ask, not with Ingrid's creepy son standing right there. But I had to know.
Did you know she was going to do that?
Do what? She wasn't doing anything to you. You were just talking. I didn't like the way Rain was smiling.
Right, okay, can we go?
You can do whatever you want. I'm going to stick around for a while. She waved at Zeke, still waiting by the truck. I'm sure I'm heartbroken to miss that fun sleepover.
You could stay too,
Stuart said. He had the oiliest smile I had ever seen.
Ma won't mind. We've got room.
No, thanks, I said, and I walked away. Walked, even though I wanted to run.
Zeke pushed away from the truck as I approached.
You're not staying?
No, I said. Rain and Stuart were heading into the house, and warm yellow light shone through the windows. I don't want to be around anybody as old as my dad who smiles at me like that.
Yeah, Stuart is a creep, he said. He has a thing for monsters.
A thing? You mean like a fetish? I scrubbed my hand on my jeans again. Gross! You could have warned me.
I said we shouldn't come here, he pointed out.
Yeah, you were right. Can you drive me back to Boulder? I wasn't quite sure yet where I would go from there, but I did know I didn't want to spend the night in the mountains.
Sure, get in.
I waited until we had left Ingrid's property before I said,
He's a murderer, too, that Stuart guy. He's not just a pervert.
How do you know?
There was hesitation in Zeke's voice, as though he wasn't sure he wanted to know the answer. I can tell,
I said. It's one of my superpowers. It's that and healing like Wolverine.
For everyone?
Yes. He was quiet after that. I drew my legs up on the seat and leaned against the door. We left the dirt road and turned onto the paved highway again, wound down through the trees, through Netherland, past the reservoir, into the high, steep gash of Boulder Canyon. The silence was starting to bother me. You're not going to ask me what Ingrid said?
No.
You're not curious?
Not really.
She thinks I'm going to become a vengeful murderer who kills everybody I meet while laughing maniacally and bathing in their blood. I rested my head against the cool glass. The mountains were dark now that the sun had set, and the headlights of passing cars flashed through the windshield. Now that I was thinking about it clearly, I could see the problems in what she had said. I wasn't going to start hunting down innocent people. I hadn't been able to hurt Lyle, not even in self-defense, because he wasn't a murderer. But Ingrid wanted me to think I could. Ingrid thought I was fascinating. An entire afternoon gone. It made me feel cold all over, naked and exposed, not knowing what she had done. Had she sat there the whole time, holding my hand, waiting and watching while my mind whirled and spun? Or had she taken a break, got herself some tea, read a few articles in The Economist, gone outside to chat with Rain and Stuart, leaving me there slumped on the couch? Or something like that, I said.
Is that all?
Zeke asked. You think it should have been worse?
Do you feel like murdering everybody you meet?
No, I said.
Not everybody.
She asked for some of my blood. Zeke looked at me sharply.
Did you?
I didn't give her anything. You said not to.
You were in there a long time.
I didn't give her anything. Why does it matter, anyway? What did she want to do with it?
I don't know, Zeke said. Magic. Nothing good.
I sighed and closed my eyes for a moment. I couldn't sleep, but I was tired, worn out, and stretched too thin. I hated not being able to sleep. She didn't even answer all of my questions. She hadn't told me why. Why was I different? Why did I come back? Why was I like this? The one thing I really wanted to know. And she had brushed it aside. I wasn't even sure if I could believe that it was a question without an answer. Somebody had to know something. I could still hear the man whispering as he dug into my grave. Oh, you're perfect. You're beautiful. You're perfect. He must have known what he would find when he started digging. It hadn't occurred to me before, but now I had to wonder if maybe I had killed the one person who could answer my questions. I don't think I like magicians very much, I said. Zeke started to speak, but I interrupted him. I know. You told me so. I'll remember next time.
Ingrid's not even one of the bad ones. There are worse.
But you still don't like her.
I don't think she always knows the difference between helping people and using people.
Rain doesn't seem to mind. Zeke glanced at me.
Rain always knows when she's using people.
Ingrid's never killed anybody. Not like her creepy son.
Good for her.
I looked across the cab of the truck at Zeke. He looked normal, as far as I could tell. Human. No obvious monster traits. He caught me staring at him and turned away. Who was it? I asked. I immediately regretted it. I winced and said quickly, No, don't answer that. Don't. I don't want to know. The shadows around him were brittle, frail, like leafless branches in winter. Just the once, I guessed. He didn't answer, but he didn't deny it either. That's reassuring, I said, considering. But now I'm kind of wondering where you get your food from, and at the same time trying really hard not to wonder at all.
You don't...
Oh, don't worry, I said. You don't smell appetizing. Zeke grinned, fleeting and not very nice, but still a smile. I had been starting to think he didn't know how. I had said it to tease him, but it was also true, in a way. There was no excitement, no yearning. Zeke had killed before, but he hadn't liked it. Not like the man by my grave, and not like Duncan Palmer. Not like Ingrid's son, whose shadows had mostly felt like slick pride. The more killers I met, the better I was getting at feeling out the differences. Zeke relaxed after that, and so did I. It's amazing what mutual denial of supernatural ill intent can do to ease the tension.
"Where were you going?" Zeke asked. "Before they found you."
"Nowhere. I don't know. I haven't decided." Zeke didn't say anything for a moment. Then he said,
"I have to work tonight, but you can stay at our place if you want."
"Your parents won't mind?" I asked.
"It's just me and my brother."
"Your brother won't mind?"
"I don't know. He might."
"And if he does?" A shrug.
"We get dinner for a week?"
"Oh my God," I said. But I couldn't help but laugh. You can't make jokes about eating dead people if you actually eat dead people.
"You're sure it's a joke?"
I was, about as sure as I could be. But I only said, "Shut up," and thanks, I guess, for the dramatic rescue, too.
"It wasn't that dramatic," Zeke said.
"You used an axe. That makes it dramatic." We spilled out of the canyon and into the city. Street lights and houses sprung up along the street, and the roads filled with nighttime traffic around the intersections. "Anyway, I appreciate it," I said. "But if I catch you sharpening your knives, I'm going to change my mind."
"You won't," Zeke said. "Our knives are always sharp."
Chapter 26. Home for Zeke and his brother was a small brick house on Boulder's west side. One level, a squat, worn rectangle, with an overgrown yard badly in need of mowing. The street was quiet. Light shone from the front windows of the neighbors' houses and silhouettes moved behind curtains, people making dinner and watching TV. But Zeke's house was dark. He let me in, flipped on the light, and said,
"I have to go. I'm going to be late for work."
I was curious about what kind of job a ghoul might have. "Where do you work?" Zeke made a face.
I clean places. You know, like office buildings, after hours."
"That is not nearly as exciting as I was expecting," I said. "I was kind of hoping you worked in a morgue or something."
"Yeah, I wish. I would tell you not to touch anything, but we don't have anything worth stealing. You can sleep on the couch, I guess."
I dropped my skateboard and backpack on the floor. "Thanks." Zeke had his hand on the door, but he hesitated.
"Don't go into the basement. Even if you... just don't."
"Why not?"
"Because I told you not to. Jake will be home in a couple of hours," he said.
And he left. I watched him back out of the driveway and waited until he turned the corner at the end of the street. Then I shamelessly began to snoop around. I had never been in a monster's house before. The house was small and old, but it was clean. The living room, the kitchen, the bathroom's eye-searing green fixtures straight out of the 70s, the bedroom with its hospital-neat twin beds. All of it was unbelievably clean. The kind of clean that came from being dusted regularly, mopped, polished, scrubbed with toothbrushes in the crevices. No dust in the vents. No bugs in the light fixtures. There was nothing in the refrigerator except spotless shelves and the strong smell of bleach. I was so relieved not to find Tupperware full of mysterious meat, I almost laughed out loud. The drawers were empty except one, which held 5 knives. Sharp, as promised. And all I found in the cabinets were some glasses and a half-empty bottle of bourbon. Everything they owned could fit into a couple of boxes. I didn't know if that was strange or not. If somebody had asked me a week ago, when I was a lonely, aimless hitchhiker without a pulse, I wouldn't have even suspected that monsters would bother to have houses. Houses and jobs and phones and cars, witchy liaisons and magical communities, brothers expected home from work, It all felt so ordinary. One door in the living room led to the garage, another to what I assumed was the basement. I reached for the knob, ready to ignore Zeke's warning, but I stopped when I heard something clank downstairs. Water pipes, I told myself. Old plumbing. I left the door closed. There was a laptop on the kitchen table, a clunky older model covered with cheerful Hello Kitty decals and silver sticker letters spelling out, "Christy!" smiley face. I turned it on and leaned back in the chair, winced at the press of wood against my injured side. I heard the noise in the basement again and looked at the closed door. Looked away when the computer booted. The desktop background matched the stickers and decals. Poor Christy. She shouldn't have left her laptop unattended. I was in the news again. Nebraska state troopers had been called to the scene of a suspicious death 2 days ago. Duncan Palmer of Minneapolis, Minnesota, was found in his car on a rural road north of I-80. There were no obvious signs of foul play. The enterprising small-town reporter had dug up Palmer's past as a murder suspect, and discovering that was like the tumblers of a lock falling into place. I read through everything I could find. I stared for a long time at the school photo of the little boy Palmer had killed. Timothy Rosoff. He was chubby and gap-toothed and grinning, with a ridiculous cowlick sticking up from the back of his head. I smelled peanut butter, and for the first time it didn't make me nauseous. It made me feel vindictive, almost proud. I looked for news about Brian Kerr, too, hoping for the same flash of certainty. But there was nothing. Nothing from home, either. The nameless man I'd killed by my grave wasn't even in the news anymore. The excitement I felt piecing together Duncan Palmer's crime didn't last. I dragged my backpack over to the table, pulled out my notebook, and opened it to the second page. I had always hated my handwriting, resented how curly and big and girly it was, and I hated it even more now. 1. Sleeping pills. 2. Drowning. 3. Rat poison. 4. Gunshot. 5. Electrocution. 6. Hanging. 7. Stabbing. 8. Skated face first into tree. I added. 9. Eviscerated by Lyle. Good band name, I thought. One more and I would have a perfect 10. I pulled the chair away from the table and angled it toward the kitchen light. Pulled up my t-shirt and tucked it beneath my chin. The wound was red and scabbed, hot to the touch. It looked infected. I didn't even know if that was possible. I hadn't bothered cleaning any of my other injuries. My dad always said the most important thing to do for an open wound was keep it clean. I needed to see what was under the scabs. I selected a knife from the kitchen drawer. Before I could sit again, I heard another sound from behind the basement door. Not a metallic clank, but the creak of wood. Somebody was on the stairs. I glanced over my shoulder. The basement door was open. My heart jumped. Only a crack, but it was open. It had been closed before. I was sure of it. I was 10 feet from the door, maybe 12. I tried to guess how many steps it would take me to get there, how fast I could move, whether I could shut the door before what? Zeke had warned me not to go into the basement. How to survive a horror movie 101. Never go into the basement. The rule had to apply double when you were alone in a monster's house. Even if the monster in question was an awkward teenage boy who had only left you alone because he had to go clean toilets in an office building. But the door was open. And, I thought, if this is a horror movie, I'm on Team Monster already. I saw the flash of an eye through the gap. It was low to the ground, gone before I could blink. Claws scrabbled noisily down the stairs. I made myself start breathing again. I didn't put down the knife. 6 steps to the basement door. I pulled it open and fumbled for the light switch. The stairs made a 90-degree turn halfway down, On the landing, there was a broom and a blue plastic bucket filled with cleaning supplies. Sponges, rags, furniture polish, spray bottle of Lysol. And, I knew it, a toothbrush. Beside the bucket was a stack of picture books. Where the Wild Things Are was on the top. That had been my favorite when I was a kid. I crept down the stairs. They creaked beneath my weight. I paused every few treads to listen. I stopped when I reached the landing halfway down. I could see the edge of a woven rug on the concrete floor at the bottom, but not much else. The air was musty and cool.
"Hello?" I said.
There was a faint scratching below.
"Hey! I'm not going to hurt you!"
My voice wavered. I wondered if I should be hiding the knife behind my back.
"I just want to, say hi."
A shadow moved at the base of the steps. It was compact and low, creeping close to the ground. The shadow became a small, skinny thing. More animal than humanoid, with a narrow head and big ears. Long, long limbs that ended in long, long claws, stretched forward to grasp at the rug, picking at the threads like a cat might need a blanket. It turned its head, sniffing the air, I thought with a fresh spark of worry, scenting me, and pulled itself forward. Long teeth jutted from the jaw. But it was the eyes that got my attention. Big and round and yellow and eerily bright and frightened. It was scared of me, the stranger in its house. My own fear vanished. What I felt in its place was more like pity with a helping of guilt.
"Hi," I said. I kept my voice low, easy.
Moving slowly, I sat on the step and picked the top book from the stack.
"Are these your books? I love this book. Would you like me to read it to you? Is that why they're here? That has to be why they're here, right?"
I was speaking too quickly. My voice shook. The thing didn't move, didn't make a sound. I opened the book and started to read about the night Max wore his wolf suit. The thing settled into the darkness as no more than a shape with big yellow eyes. If it blinked, I didn't see it. I had read that same book to Sunny 100 times when she was little. She had insisted on dressing up as a wolf with a crown 2 Halloweens in a row. Mom and Dad had discovered fairly early that I was so proud of my reading skills they could delegate bedtime stories to me whenever they wanted. Mom and Dad would lurk outside the door, smiling fondly, and sometimes Meadow would listen too, always pretending not to care. Sunny had loved bedtime stories long after she could read for herself, but she had lost interest a few years ago. She still read all the time, had won the local library summer reading contest for 3 years. But if she ever missed me reading to her, she had never mentioned it. When I finished the book, the thing at the bottom of the stairs made a quiet noise, a disgruntled little huff that wasn't quite a word.
"That's the end," I said. "You know it always ends the same way."
I didn't want to think about Sunny and Mom and Dad anymore. I shouldn't have come down here. I had thought it would be better, to make that little creature less scared of me. But it didn't help at all. The thing blinked at me, just once, and slunk away into the darkness. I heard claws tapping faintly on the cement floor, the soft rustle of something that might have been paper or straw. And the basement was silent. Chapter 27. I returned to the kitchen with its bright lights to clean the wounds Lyle had given me. I positioned the tip of the knife over the longest claw mark and pressed down to make a dent in the scab. My hand was shaking. I stared at the blade. I had done this before. It was item number 7 on my list of possible ways to die. By the time I got to 7, I was pretty sure nothing I could do to myself would be permanent. By the time I got to 7, I was already contemplating more extreme options. Incineration,
decapitation, and knowing they too wouldn't work. The wound from number 7 had faded to a scar, a fine white line just below my navel. It had bled a lot. It had hurt even more. I pushed the knife into the wound again. It broke through the skin with a bright spark of pain. I watched the blood trickle down my side. I pressed the tip of the knife into another spot. Clean, unharmed skin. Made another puncture. Watched it bleed again. Again. Then deeper. And deeper still. Puncturing a matchstick scatter of small cuts around the slashes Lyle had made. The sting of breaking skin gave way to a different kind of ache. My breath was short and shallow, and my lungs burned. I was going to ruin my stolen jeans. I didn't know how to wash bloodstains out of clothes. I ought to learn. A key scraped in the front door. I jumped to my feet as a man came in. "Hi," I said. I was still holding my shirt up. The knife in my hand was bloody. The man locked the door, lifted the curtain on the front window to glance out, then turned to me and said, "Hi, I'm Jake Horn, Zeke's brother." I waved a little, stopped when I realized I was waving the bloody knife. "Hi, I'm Breezy. I'm the reanimated corpse your brother found in Wyoming."
"He told me. He said you needed help."
Jake hesitated, then took a few steps closer, but cautiously.
"What are you doing?"
This is awkward. I lowered the knife. My face grew hot. I was standing in his kitchen with a bloody knife in one hand, half a dozen stab wounds on my side, and no good explanation. I thought maybe I should put the knife down, but I didn't want to spread blood all over the counter. "I'm just trying to clean it," I said finally. It sounded even stupider out loud than it did inside my head. "It's healing, but not like it should. I thought, maybe I should clean it." Jake stared at me.
"That doesn't hurt?"
"Yeah, it hurts. It hurts a lot."
"It stopped bleeding,"
Jake said. He looked curious rather than revolted, but he stayed carefully out of knife-jabbing range. "I heal fast. I don't know why."
"Magic." I rolled my eyes.
"Wow, thanks, that's so helpful. I never would have figured that one out on my own, all this magic happening to me."
Jake looked at me for a few more seconds.
He looked a lot like his brother, but unlike Zeke, he had no trouble meeting my eyes. He turned and disappeared down the hallway for about a minute. He came back with a silver scalpel.
"Try that instead of a kitchen knife,"
Jake said. He leaned against the counter.
"It's not happening to you. You are the source of the magic."
"I don't know what that means. It feels like it's happening to me." I set the knife down, picked up the glinting scalpel. "I'm not going to ask why you keep a scalpel in your bedroom."
"Somebody tried to kill you, right?"
I tugged down my scarf and lifted my chin to show off the bruises. "He succeeded."
"If he had really succeeded,"
Jake said, amused,
"you wouldn't be sitting here, bleeding all over my kitchen."
"I'm barely bleeding at all anymore."
"I would be again, as soon as I got to work with the scalpel."
But I hesitated. "I still don't understand."
"That's where magic comes from."
"From being murdered?"
"From death,"
he said.
"From any kind of death. That's how magicians get their magic."
"By killing people?" My voice rose with alarm. "Seriously? I thought they were born with it. Like it's genetic or something." I wasn't going to admit I had only assumed that because that's how it worked in Harry Potter. I felt a pang of sadness that Harry Potter had been lying to me all along.
"Nah, humans aren't born with magic,"
Jake said. Unlike Rain, he didn't seem to be making fun of me for what I didn't know. I decided I liked him just for that.
"They get it from the death of any living thing. Most use animals or insects."
The mixture Mr. Willow had used to knock me out, and the bowl of dead beetles in Ingrid's house, not to mention the blood-soaked room,
They made a lot more sense with that context, but they weren't all that came to mind. A lot of birds died the day I came back, I said. I mean, like, thousands of birds. Was that? Obviously it was related, right? Jake's eyebrows went up in surprise.
That was you? In Chicago?
I shifted uncomfortably. You heard about it?
Everybody heard about it. When something like that happens, well, it's kind of hard to ignore. Usually it means a magician has seriously fucked up.
I tugged at the scarf and tried to hide how my hands were trembling. Does that mean somebody did this to me on purpose?
Not necessarily, Jake said. He didn't have to know what he was doing, or even to be doing it to you specifically. Magic is messy. It's unpredictable. Even when it works, it doesn't usually work how the magician wants it to. And sometimes it's a complete accident.
You mean I'm an accident?
It's possible. Nobody's taken credit for the birds. Or blame, I guess. Nobody has any idea who was involved.
Not at all?
Do you?
I didn't know his name, but I knew how angry he felt when he stood outside a house on a winter prairie.
Oh, you're perfect. You're beautiful.
That's what he had said when he leaned over my grave. I knew he had decided to shoot the children and the husband first to get them out of the way. I knew the thrill he had felt pushing a knife into the woman's heart. How he had carefully wiped his shoes on the doormat before leaving. I knew he was dead, because I had killed him. But if nobody else had put it together yet, I wasn't going to do it for them. My brave new monster-filled world was hard enough to navigate without me revealing myself as a murderer to everybody I met. No, nothing, I said, the words as casual and dismissive as I could manage. I don't know how any of this works. What about plants? Does killing them make magic? Plants are living things. Jake laughed.
You know, I have no idea. Maybe it takes a lot of plants to do anything worthwhile.
Like if a magician started a forest fire.
If it would work, I'm sure somebody's tried it, Jake said. I really don't know. We're sort of immune to most magic, so I only know what other people have told me.
Immune? I repeated. Then I understood. Oh, so that's why Zeke could get into that room when Rain and I couldn't even touch the walls. Have you always been... I hesitated. There was no polite way to ask. Were you born like this? A ghoul? Jake was surprised by the question.
Well, yeah.
Oh, how does that even work?
Do you need me to give you the talk about what happens when a mommy and a daddy like each other very much?
I really don't, thanks. So people, I mean humans aren't born magical, but they can do magic if they kill stuff.
Right.
And some things, I mean people, sorry, some people are born not human, because their parents weren't human. And that's just biology.
More or less.
And I'm not either one of those things.
Nope,
said Jake.
You're a little different.
Okay, I think I get it. Thanks.
What for?
I looked down at the scalpel. My hand was still shaking. You're the first person I've met who's actually tried to explain anything to me. Rain and Ingrid just kind of assumed that I already knew all of that. I asked Ingrid why I was, you know, like this, but she just said I wouldn't understand.
That's her way of saying she doesn't know either.
She could have just told me that.
She doesn't like to admit she doesn't know things. Do you want help?
For a second, I thought he meant help in the big picture, the cosmic picture. Help with life and death and afterlife and questions and answers and the fact that nothing made any sense at all anymore. And my knee-jerk reaction was to insist I didn't need anything. But he was only talking about my injuries. He held out his hand for the scalpel. I didn't pass it over. Jake smiled slightly.
Don't worry. You don't smell appetizing.
That's exactly what your brother said, and it's even worse the second time. You know that implies other people do smell appetizing, right?
Only the ones who are all the way dead, Jake said. Do you want help or not?
I gave him the scalpel. Without a couple of mirrors and some rapidly acquired contortionist skills, I was never going to be able to do it myself. Jake patted the counter beside the sink and told me to jump up so he could see better. He prodded the wounds with the scalpel. I hissed and clenched my teeth.
I know you heard me when I said it hurts.
Sorry. Jake didn't sound sorry. He sounded interested. It's weird. It's healing unevenly.
I'm sure they cover that in the Undead Medical Emergency Handbook, but I lost my copy. Do you know what you're doing?
Sure.
Lots of practice with first aid?
Yes, actually, he said. My brother is a dumbass.
He didn't say it meanly. He said it fondly, and for a moment I missed my sister so much my chest hurt.
Jake pressed the scalpel in, more surely this time. Blood seeped out and I stopped watching.
How did you meet Rain?
Jake asked calmly, like he wasn't starting a bloody excavation into my side.
We got locked up together. I didn't get to pick my roommate.
You didn't know her before that?
No. Why?
No reason, Jake said, in that voice people use when they have a lot of reasons but would prefer not to share.
What did she say to Zeke? To get him to help her?
He added, when I glanced at him.
I don't know.
I thought back to the one side of the phone conversation I had heard.
She said he owed her for something.
Did she threaten him?
He looked up at me, and from that close, I could see that the pupils of his eyes weren't quite round. It was subtle, no more than a slight oval distortion. But it was there.
I don't know. Maybe. I don't know what she was talking about. He didn't tell you?
He told me what you guys found in that house, Jake said. This is going to hurt.
It did hurt. But more than that, it felt unbelievably weird when he pried the scalpel into the cut and pressed his fingers in to draw something out. Sodden scraps of cloth. Pieces of Violet's dress driven into the wounds by Lyle's claws.
That's disgusting, I said.
Jake dropped the soggy mess into the sink and grabbed a towel, dampened it, and began cleaning the wound. When he was done, he pressed the towel to my side and told me to hold it in place.
I guess you don't need stitches, he said.
No, it'll close on its own, I said, a little breathless. Thanks.
I dropped from the counter and sat at the table while Jake washed his hands.
I'm not sure if it would even work, I said.
He glanced over his shoulder.
What?
Chopping me up into little pieces in revenge for threatening your little brother, or whatever it is you were thinking?
That's not exactly what I had in mind.
Well, good. But it probably wouldn't work anyway.
Because none of the other things you tried worked?
Jake dried his hands on his jeans. Apparently they had only one towel, and I was bleeding into it, and sat down beside me. He nodded at my NASA notebook lying open on the table.
The sleeping pills were a really stupid idea.
I know. I tilted my head back and stared at the ceiling. It was better than looking at my own blood. Better than looking at the list. Dumbest idea ever. But let's not talk about what does or doesn't happen in my digestive system anymore.
I'm surprised the electrocution didn't have any effect. Electricity kills a lot of things. Even things that almost nothing else can hurt.
Not me, I said. I mean, yeah, it hurt, but it only stunned me for a couple of minutes.
Gunshot?
I had a puckered scar the size of a nickel on my chest. I hadn't been brave enough to aim it at my head. I figured by then it wasn't going to work.
But you kept doing it anyway?
They say that's one definition of insanity.
I lifted the towel away from the wound. It was already knitting together. I didn't want to talk about my many failed attempts at making my death permanent. At some point, it had become more habit than earnest experimentation. I was already growing tired of my new collection of scars.
It's been that way since you...
woke up? Came back? Undied?
Yeah.
Do you remember how it happened?
He asked. No.
I remember nothing. That's what I had told Ingrid and Rain. Nothing, nothing, nothing. It was so easy to lie. But for the first time, I didn't want to. I hadn't realized, during all the days I spent wandering through Chicago, hitchhiking across the country, how lonely it was to put so much effort into lying about who I was. The patchwork girl made up of my friends and their friends, embellished by people's careless assumptions and expectations. She was unraveling, and I didn't want to piece her back together. I remember going to a party, I said. I am a dead teenage cliché. I remember the stupid music and the beer and my best friend. I touched my cheek as though I could still feel the warm sting of Melanie's hand. She slapped me. That's almost the last thing I remember. That doesn't seem fair, does it? My last memory of my entire life is my best friend since kindergarten slapping me.
Did you have a fight? Jake asked.
No. I took a breath. There was an uncomfortable knot in my stomach. I kissed her. It seemed like a good idea at the time. She didn't think so. I wasn't sure what kind of reaction I was expecting, but Jake didn't look alarmed or disgusted. He was smiling. It was a sad smile.
I got a black eye and a bloody nose when I tried that.
Yeah? What happened? He shrugged.
Nothing. He apologized and went to get some ice. We told our parents I fell out of a tree.
Did he ever forgive you?
I don't know. What does your family think happened to you?
I accepted the change of topic. I'm missing. They had flyers and volunteers and a neighborhood search and everything.
Yard signs.
You've never seen anybody do yard signs like the concerned citizens of Evanston do yard signs. I would probably be on a milk carton if they still did that. Do they still do that? I gestured at the laptop. The screen had gone dark. There's a webpage. My friends made it. It was the 1-year anniversary a few weeks ago. They posted all these things about... nothing important. Stupid stuff. I had read through the entire page. Every post and comment, all the way back to when it first started. There was a picture at the top of the page, me and Melanie together at a diner we used to visit on Friday afternoons. I remembered that day. Maria had taken the picture. She had been sitting across the table from us, complaining about how soggy her fries were and trying to get the waiter's attention. Melanie had whispered to me that Maria didn't care about her fries, she just wanted to flirt with the waiter. And I had sat up on my knees to look over the side of the booth to get a look at him. He wasn't anything special. A thin-faced college boy wearing the stupid restaurant uniform and a fake smile. Everything about his demeanor saying that he knew the high school kids making a mess in his section would skimp on the tips. He barely even glanced at Maria when she finally got him to come over. She huffed and rolled her eyes, then immediately switched her attention to taking pictures of everybody around her. She told me and Melanie to smile, and Melanie had hooked her arm around my neck and we both put on big, stupid grins for the camera. It wasn't Maria's waiter who brought her fresh fries to our table, but somebody we knew from school. He appeared beside our table and said,
"Hi, Breezy,"
not even glancing at Maria when he set the basket of fries in front of her. I said, "Hi, Ricky," polite reflex. And he had hovered awkwardly until Melanie cracked up with her familiar snorting laugh and said, "We don't need anything else. Not unless you want to recite some poetry for us." He flushed red and slunk away. If I thought about it, closed my eyes, and remembered, I could still feel the heat of Melanie's arm around my neck, across the back of my shoulders, and count the seconds she let it linger. The online comments in the beginning had all been suggestions, speculation, worries, predictions that other girls would go missing soon, thoughts about how to organize. There had been search parties. They put up posters. They spread rumors. The cops brought out the canine units. The dogs never had a chance. I wasn't decaying, so there was no corpse smell for them to follow.
but I wasn't myself anymore either.
I was too degraded. All that effort, all that searching, and nobody once looked in the backyard of that foreclosed house just a few blocks from my home. I was only buried beneath 18 inches of soil. A whole year, and nobody had noticed. People must have come through that house. Potential buyers standing at the glass door, looking across the cracked cement porch and brown grass, talking about how much space there was for entertaining, for kids to play. It just needed a little bit of work. A little bit of landscaping. They must have looked right over me. Right over the disturbed ground where somebody had dug a grave. But not a very deep one. The more recent comments on the page had been memories, pictures, insults, rumors. Ran away with an older boyfriend. Maybe she promised to love him long time. Get it? It's just a joke. Don't be so easily offended. Not saying she was a slut, but come on, you know how she was. She should have been more careful. Shouldn't have been drinking and wearing those clothes. Like anybody was surprised. Didn't her parents feel stupid for not knowing what she was like? Reading through those comments felt like invading the edges of somebody else's life. Another version of me who had done things I never had. Suffered the hatred of people I had never even met. An imaginary girl overshadowing the real one. I don't think they're looking for me anymore, I said.
Why didn't you go home? Jake asked.
I did, I said. Right after I woke up. Nobody was home. So I left. What was I supposed to tell them anyway?
He didn't try to answer. He only said, I'm sorry.
I looked away, and Jake stood and walked out of the room. A minute later, he came back with a folded-up blanket and a pillow. He set them on one end of the sofa, then stepped over to the front window and looked through the curtains again. Why do you keep doing that? I said.
Habit. I've got work in the morning, so I'm going to...
There was a quiet scratching behind the basement door. I have a confession to make, I said. Zeke told me not to go down into the basement.
But you did anyway?
Jake walked over to the door, pounded on it a few times. The scratching stopped, and the stairs creaked.
So you met Steve?
It has a name? I said, incredulous. Its name is Steve?
What is it?
I don't know if it really has a name, Jake said. It's a brownie. They don't talk. But Zeke felt sorry for it because our landlady just kept calling it that horrible thing. So he gave it a name.
Your landlady knows about it? Is it like a pet?
It's not a wild animal. It came with the house. Jake explained. We don't know for sure, but we think our landlady's mother brought it with her when she moved here. After she died, it refused to leave, but it didn't want anybody else moving in either. It doesn't like humans.
What did it do?
Scared them away, Jake said. Little things, mostly. But after it pushed one man down the stairs, word got around.
He was badly hurt?
He broke his neck. He died.
Jake looked at me, waiting for my reaction. The big-eyed creature might have been alarming to look at, but it is hard to imagine it trying to kill people between its bedtime stories. It was so little and quiet and scared. It didn't try to hurt me, I said. It didn't do anything.
You're not human.
Yes, I stopped. I wanted to argue with him. But I couldn't. The protest was dust on my tongue. Jake pretended not to notice.
So now our landlady doesn't rent to humans anymore. It'll leave you alone as long as you don't go downstairs.
I won't. For real this time. But it wasn't the thing in the basement that interested me. It was the fact that a human might know enough about monsters to rent only to people the homicidal house elf in the basement wouldn't hurt.